I'm Liz Corey.
And I'm Katie King.
And this is True Crime New England, Case Profiles Edition.
Hello, welcome back to another mini episode.
Thank you for joining us on this Sunday. We are so grateful, as usual, to have you as we navigate these crazy states and the lack of diversity that is within them.
Yes, so if you guys are not familiar with our mini episodes, our case profiles, it is where we tell you, as well as each other, cases of people of color in New England who just have not gotten the right amount of media coverage, media attention, attention from law enforcement, and as a result, most of the cases we tell you are unsolved.
Very well said, Katie, and you know, every time we post one of these episodes, it's always the same, and just the stories are different, but the premise is always exactly what Katie just said, the lack of diversity. It's so prominent in New England that these cases just need to be covered, and we are so, so happy to do that in any way we can. And as always, we ask that you guys, the listeners, if you have any cases that you want to recommend to us that are of people of color who there's minimal resources, you always send them our way because we will do our very best to cover it in some capacity.
Yes. So the way that we do this is I will tell Liz and you guys a case that I have researched separately. Liz will do the same. So any exclamations that you hear, any kind of, oh, wow, that's crazy. No way. Really? Wow. I can't believe that is genuine because while we have a master list of names that we pull from, we don't know really any details about these people until we go and research them separately and then tell them to each other and you guys. And because it is an even number episode, Liz, you are kicking us off today.
Awesome. Let me start by giving you, Katie, and my listeners, our listeners, my sources. Today, I'm going to be telling you about the story of Travis Monroe. The sources I have are The Free Library and MassLive.com, which I feel like is one we use almost all the time with these case profiles. So, on October 1st of 2006, police were called to the corner of Gunnarsson Road and Fales Street in Worcester, Massachusetts. Worcester is one of those towns that often shows up in these case profiles, along with like Lawrence, Massachusetts as well, mm-hmm. which is unfortunate, but it's just those towns unfortunately have that negative connotation sometimes, which is really unfortunate. There, at the corner of Gunnarsson and Fales, like I just said, they found a 17-year-old Travis Monroe on the ground, blood pouring out of his head and pooling around him. By the time the EMTs arrived, it was like 5:30 in the morning, Travis was dead. How many times have we started a story off like this?
Come on, like...
Constant.
Similar area.
Mm-hmm.
Similar situation.
Yeah.
Gunshot wounds, body on the pavement,
mm-hmm.
young kid.
Yep. And this one has a twist. It's mysterious for a lot of reasons, but to me, it's more mysterious because of they couldn't necessarily figure out the cause of death.
Ooh.
Yeah. On first glance, it seemed quite apparent that Travis had been struck and killed by a car. Once he was taken to the hospital, his injuries were looked at more closely, and they noticed he had friction or road rash on his back. He also had injuries to his hands that kind of indicated to them that they weren't, like, defensive injuries, like he wasn't fighting back on anyone. And he also had injuries to his head, which would be leading why he was found bleeding in the street, which often appears as a gunshot. Almost
yeah.
always. Yeah.
That Holy shit.
Pooling, yeah. So the police... To them, it seemed pretty cut and dry. He was hit by a car. It was a hit and run. That's really sad. Damn. What backed that up, also, the road rash, the location, because he was on the street, and his injuries, again, the road rash, and there were witness statements claiming that Travis was seen staggering in the street that morning. His mom later says that doesn't sound like him. He was 17. He didn't do drugs or... you know, drink. This was very unlike him. Also, it appeared that he did have a tire track on his shirt, so it's starting to seem more and more like a car hit him, right? And even if that was the case, hit and run is still a fucking crime, so whether it was that intentional or if it was a hit and run, it still needs to be solved.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So like I said, Travis's mom, her name was Christy Berry, she said he didn't do drugs or alcohol, anything like that. And it was also odd because later when the autopsy came out, his system was clean of anything, drugs, alcohol, all that stuff. So it was like, okay, clearly whoever saw him staggering in the street, could it have been that they saw him, was he injured before?
I was going to say, if you have a head injury,
right,
or maybe you were hit by a car and adrenaline is picking you up off the street before you collapse.
Exactly.
I too would be staggering.
Absolutely. Dr. Elizabeth Bundock, who was the state medical examiner, listed Travis's cause of death as blunt impact to the head with fractures to the skull and lacerations to the brain. She also estimated that the injuries he had on his face were consistent with being hit by a car's bumper specifically, or a guardrail. She also ended up concluding that the manner of the death was, quote, undetermined, and that there was a higher likelihood that he was hit by a car rather than assault. What investigators found odd, however, was that there was also not a single piece of car debris near his body, or anywhere really in that area, which is almost always guaranteed to happen when someone is hit by a car or a car hits something. There's always pieces of the car, the bumper, the hood, right? Nothing. Travis's mother, Christy, and his friends and classmates began postulating theories as to what happened that early morning. Some people think that Travis was beaten and then driven to that location in which he was found, being left to die, whether it was intended to stage it like he was hit by a car, or a car actually came and hit him on accident because his body was dumped. That is the kind of theory. Like, they didn't think that he was killed by the car, or that he was, or that it was an accident. More that it was, he was intentionally beat and then left to die, or it was intended to look like a accident.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Some say that he was beat by a group of teens that had been lurking nearby that afternoon. I don't know if that's necessarily true. That sounds just like something someone says to say something, but it could be true. I mean, this is where the police would go in and say, gang, it was a gang.
Exact. I was waiting for that.
Yeah.
I was waiting for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Surprisingly, there's no mention of gangs in this story, which is great. So that's a first for us.
Yeah, there we go. Making progress.
Christy believes that Travis was already injured when he was struck by the car, and she believes that he was put there to make it seem like an accident. That's what she is thinking is the most accurate. She also recalls that the night before his death, Travis got into an argument with her husband, his stepfather, who was really pissed off because Travis had gotten suspended and he, like, was not allowed to go out. I mean, typical fair punishment, right? For, you know, he got suspended, so he wasn't allowed to leave the house. He wasn't allowed to use his phone, none of that. And so that night, she learned that Travis actually had snuck out of the house with his portable PlayStation, and they wonder, where was he going with that PlayStation? I'm sure just to hang out with friends, sneak out. His mom wasn't there. She was at, like, a friend's house, and so they think that maybe when Travis was on his way to a friend's house or wherever he was sneaking out to, that's when whatever happened, happened. Interestingly enough, the PlayStation was never found. So, to me, that also seems like robbery.
I was just gonna say.
Or, because if you're a kid and you're carrying a PlayStation, and it's dark and you're alone and you're clearly a teenager, I'm sorry. That is perfect grounds for somebody who's looking to be a piece of shit and rob a kid. Or was he at a friend's house with the PlayStation, left it there, and then, you know, something happened and he was beat up and that friend is hiding the PlayStation because he's nervous it'll connect him to the murder or whatever. There's a whole bunch of things that could happen. To this day, as it usually goes, nobody knows what happened to Travis for sure. Whether it was homicide or a hit and run, like I said, no one has been held responsible. So his family is still asking, begging for answers. And I think, like I said, whether it was an accidental hit and run or he was beaten and then left to die and then hit by a car, however it happened, he was killed and nobody has been held responsible. So that is a crime and he deserves that justice.
For sure. A 17-year-old kid was bleeding out in the street.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether or not it was intentional, regardless of whether or not I don't know, maybe someone was drunk driving.
Right. Very possible.
And they don't recall, or they don't want to recall the incident. Or maybe it's a combination of both, which I think is the craziest thing on earth.
Right.
If he was dumped there from a different spot after he was assaulted.
Yeah.
And then someone drove over him because he was dumped there.
Right.
So then that's a two for one. That's
literally
someone or multiple someones assaulted the shit out of this kid. And then you have a hit and run in combination.
It's horrible. Wow. And again, 2006. So that's what? 17 years, give or take? That's a long ass time. Poor kid. That's as long as he was alive. Mm-hmm. Poor kid. Anyone with information is asked to call the Detective Bureau at 508-799-8651 or the Traffic Division at 508-799-8674. And that is the mysterious and awful unsolved murder of Travis Monroe.
Holy shit.
Very sad. It really just breaks your heart every time. And we always talk about these kids. They're always kids. Always. Always. Or they always have, like, little babies. Or something where it's like, are you serious?
Right. Like, why anyone, but why especially this person?
Right. They're always so innocent. I feel so terrible.
Okay, Katie. What story that undoubtedly is just as terrible do you have for me today?
I also have an unsolved murder.
I'm so surprised by that.
I know.
They're never unsolved.
I will be telling you, Liz, and our lovely listeners about the unsolved murder of Carrie Lee Mock.
All right.
My sources today are Unsolved New England, GreenwichTime.org, and Patch.com.
Nice.
36-year-old Carrie Mock, nicknamed Cat, was known as a lovely person and a dedicated mom to her 12-year-old daughter, Josephine.
Oh.
Carrie was also one of 10 siblings raised in Alabama.
Whoa.
Some of the family had come up north in the 1960s and early 1970s, and they settled in or around Stamford, Connecticut. Okay. So this is where Carrie ended up in the area in Connecticut. Mm. And both of Carrie's parents actually passed away just 2 years before this incident I'm about to tell you about.
Oh.
On July 19th, 1981, Carrie's family began to worry when she wasn't answering her landline at her home on Fairfield Avenue on the west side of Stamford, Connecticut.
Okay.
Her sister, Arlene Hines, would call her first thing in the morning and before bed every night just to touch base, talk.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they were sisters. They were so close.
That's cute.
And it seemed like it was those two that had formed a very close bond. You know, one of 10 siblings. You're going to be close with all of your siblings, but
right.
You're going to be closer with some than others.
Right.
So it seemed like her sister Arlene had that bond with her.
Oh.
Arlene immediately knew something was wrong when Carrie didn't answer the phone. After hours went by with no answer, her family contacted Stamford, Connecticut police. Investigation revealed that Carrie was last seen by one of her other sisters named Mary McLean the night before at a club on the west side on Richmond Hill in Stamford.
Okay.
Both girls had left the club just before midnight, and this was the last time Carrie was seen alive.
Oh.
Just hours after she was reported missing, Carrie's body was found.
Really?
Wow.
At just before 6 p.m.
Holy shit.
Three young boys near the school grounds of the Brunswick School's Mayor property in Greenwich found her body.
Three young boys?
On school grounds.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Greenwich, for those of you that don't know, is one of the bougiest and wealthiest towns literally in the entire country.
Yeah, I believe it.
Mm-hmm. She was found in a wooded area by the tennis courts, just on the border of the school grounds and the woods.
I think that tells you how rich it was, is that the school had tennis courts.
Thank you.
That's pretty richy.
Thank you.
And how awful to leave a bot. All of it's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But that is so purposeful and adding such a purposeful shock value. How terrible.
Thank you. And I think it's also very intentional that Carrie was not wealthy. She lived on the west side of Stamford, which, is it a fine area? Yes, but it's not Greenwich, Connecticut.
Right.
So I think it's also, you're exactly right, it's very intentional that not only was the body of a black woman left where someone could find her,
yeah,
it was left near tennis courts on a school ground in one of the wealthiest areas in the entire country.
Yikes.
So it sounds like a very fuck you, look what I can get away with, look what I did, I want people to know that I murdered this woman.
Absolutely.
Carrie was found partially clothed, and the clothes that she was wearing were not the same clothes that she was last seen in.
Oh.
Mary believes that her sister went home, but then went back out to meet someone else, and that the person she ended up meeting is the one responsible for her murder.
Whoa.
Yeah. Maybe she met someone at the club, and she was like, I'm just gonna go home and change really quick, and then I'll meet you here.
Yeah.
Hmm. Autopsy revealed that Carrie had been strangled and stabbed multiple times in her neck, but that despite being partially clothed, she was not sexually assaulted.
Really?
Which is interesting.
That is very interesting.
But multiple stab wounds and strangulation to her neck, that's very angry.
Yeah.
It's very volatile.
Yeah.
So I wonder if someone did end up picking her up at the club and agreeing to meet with her and then just lashed out.
Ugh.
It was very obvious to investigators that Carrie was murdered in a different location before being brought and dumped on the school grounds in the wooded area.
Hmm.
It also seemed like she was dragged on her back from the end of Sherwood Place, which is a dead-end street, to where her body was found underneath the trees about 150 feet away.
Huh. Like they stopped a car and dropped her body off, or...
It seems like they could have parked at the end of... Because it's a dead end.
Right.
They could have parked at the end of that street and then dragged her into the woods. So it also seems like that person either scouted out the area beforehand, knew exactly that's where they wanted her, or was familiar with the area in itself.
Right.
Retired police chief Raymond Grant stated, quote, her head was facing up to the northeast, she was on her back, and there was evidence that she had been dragged headfirst and on her back. So it sounds like by her arms.
Yeah.
Carrie's husband, Jimmy Lee Mock, had left the family several years before and went back to Alabama where they were from. So police said that neither he or several male friends of hers could be suspects.
Yeah.
So it's automatically not the husband.
Which is great.
Yeah. Because that's usually the first person you look at is the husband or the boyfriend or a male friend that maybe she was flirty with. Or,
right.
Yeah. Nobody. So we truly have no idea who this person is. Carrie was part of the original Connecticut cold case deck of cards, and she is the Eight of Hearts. Her case is still cold, but actually has recently been reopened for examination.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, so it'd be really cool if we could see this solved.
Yeah, I'm hopeful for that.
Anyone with any information on the murder of Carrie Lee Mock is asked to contact the Greenwich Police Department tip line at 203-622-3333 or their 800 number, 1-800-372-1176.
Wow.
And that is the unsolved, hopefully to be soon solved, murder of Carrie Lee Mock.
Wow. That's scary.
Isn't that fucked?
Something about having A, three young boys finding the body, and B, it being found on school property.
Mm-hmm.
So intentional.
Like a bougie private school.
Yeah. So intentional.
Mm-hmm.
Sending a message almost.
Thank you.
Yeah. Wow. That's awful. Like I said at the top of the episode, if you guys have any cases that you think would fit our case profile miniseries appropriately, you can send them our way. No case is too small, and no case, technically speaking, is too big. If it's a lot of information, we'll turn it right into a regular episode. We love when we can do that. It's not very often. So you can send these our way at truecrimene@gmail.com, which is our email. You can find us on social media, truecrimene. Send them our way. We will do whatever we can to get these stories out there.
Yes, and even if you send us one and we're thinking, oh shit, we can't even do a mini episode, we do Instagram posts and posts on our website with the information you send us, a picture, usually a tip line, because most of the time they are unsolved, but that way we are still getting them out there in some way, shape, or form, and we're not just back to square one.
Right. Exactly. And with that, we'll see you on Thursday. Bye.
Bye.